You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. Thanks for joining us. The JX starts today with a special election edition of The Debrief, where JPR reporters discuss the latest local results from across the region. I'm your host, Mike Green.
I'm Roman Battaglia, science, environment, and politics reporter.
I'm Justin Higginbottom, public health and safety reporter.
And I'm Jane Vaughn, housing, homelessness, and education reporter.
Roman, you covered the highly contested race for sheriff in Klamath County. Who are the two candidates running for election?
Yeah, so there is Shane Mitchell and Brian Bryson. So they both either have or they currently work at the sheriff's office. Mitchell is a sergeant. He's the liaison for the Klamath Community College. And then Bryson was previously an operations captain for the sheriff's office, but he retired back in June of this year. He retired, but he actually claims that he was pushed out of the position by the current sheriff, Chris Caber, as retaliation for reporting unethical behavior. That's actually the topic of a lawsuit that Bryson has filed against the current sheriff because of this.
What do the initial results from Klamath County tell us about the race?
So the initial results right now, and obviously these are just preliminary, but you know a lot of the ballots are in at this point, are showing that Shane Mitchell has a pretty sizable lead. It shows Mitchell leading against Bryson by over 30 percentage points. Honestly, that's not a super surprising thing, at least for me. Mitchell appeared to be the clear favorite based on the results from the May primary. In that race, which had seven candidates, Mitchell still managed to get 37% of the vote, which obviously isn't enough. It wasn't able to win the election outright. You need more than 50% in the primary, but you know that was a lot more than any of the other candidates. For example, Bryson was only able to capture a little under 14%, which was just barely higher than the third highest candidate in that race.
So apparently there were a large number of candidates in the primary for this race. Why were there so many people wanting this position?
I think a big part of it was because it was an open seat. So the current sheriff, Chris Caber, decided not to run again. And so because of that, after he decided that, we saw a huge number of people throw their hats into the ring. A lot of them were current or former members of the sheriff's department, although we had, I believe, at least one outsider who had been running for the position. But we just saw a lot of people from different areas of the sheriff's office throw their hat in the ring and run for sheriff. So Caber at the time was embroiled in a public fight with county commissioners last year. Mm. He had disagreed with, you know, commissioners about ethics rules and the management of his two sons who also work at the department. So previously when he was elected sheriff, he agreed with county commissioners to allow someone else to oversee his two sons, you know, go over promotions, firing, hiring, stuff like that, and all to avoid a conflict of interest. But then last year, he reassigned one of his sons to another position in the department without consulting other people and without opening the job to other people. And that caused county commissioners to revoke their previous agreement, threaten to fire his two sons. Eventually, Caber was cleared of any wrongdoing in an investigation by a state ethics agency. But after all of that stuff, he just decided not to run for reelection again.
So what do we know about Shane Mitchell and how he's going to run the sheriff office?
Yeah, I think one big thing is that Shane Mitchell could possibly be the first Native American sheriff in Oregon history.
Wow.
I tried looking for other Native sheriffs in Oregon in the news and articles, but I couldn't find anything. That's not to say that hasn't happened before. It could be likely. But Mitchell is an enrolled member of the Klamath tribes, and he has talked about wanting to improve the relationship between the tribes and the sheriff's office. He also wants to improve relationships with other agencies like the Oregon State Police and the U.S. Forest Service, and he wants to build a better relationship with county commissioners as well. Because of the current sheriff, Chris Caber, and all the ethics stuff and the public fight, that relationship has been really strained, and so he's hoping to rebuild that relationship so that the sheriff and county commissioners can work together. That's obviously, you know, going to be a little bit easier because there's less ethic issues. You know, Mitchell doesn't have any sons in the sheriff's office. That's not going to be a problem. And he's hoping that rebuilding that relationship will help improve staffing and budgeting in the sheriff's office. The county's been facing a budget shortfall, and the Klamath County Sheriff's Office just really can't afford to keep as many deputies as they would like. The pay for Klamath County Sheriff's deputies is less than Klamath Falls Police Department, the Oregon State Police, and nearby sheriff's offices in other counties. So increasing the budget is a priority for Mitchell, and also just making the place a more inviting place for people to work as a way of keeping people there. He wants to empower the deputies to provide input on the office and help improve things to make sure that they're involved in kind of what's going on in the office.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. Justin, You were following some sort of contentious ballot initiative in Eureka. Tell me about the results for Measure F.
Yeah, so it looks like Measure F did not pass. 68% voted against that measure. And just for background, Measure F was really a reaction against the city's general plan that they passed in 2020 to build affordable housing on 14 city-owned parking lots downtown. Measure F would have kind of changed that by requiring those developments to add parking, the amount of parking that might have been lost for construction. And opponents to the measure said that would basically make that affordable housing plan impossible for the city. It was a lot of money was behind this campaign. It was the most expensive in Humboldt County's history. Local businessman Rob Arkley spent over $1 million, I think $1.6 million in support of Measure F. So it was a little surprising that it lost so much. So people really didn't want this, and I think they took the message of opponents to Measure F seriously, that by passing this, Eureka wouldn't get the affordable housing that they had planned.
Okay. So what's next for Eureka?
So they'll start building on these city-owned parking lots downtown. There's already a few developers that have bid, and those bids have been accepted, including one tribal-owned company that's going to put affordable housing there. So in the decades to come, we'll be following this, and I'm sure there'll be hiccups along the way. But in the decades to come, Eureka will have quite a bit more affordable housing right in the heart of downtown. Eureka's going to look like a denser city, a bit more walkable. And yeah, that'll be fun to watch how that shakes out.
Okay. You also followed an Oregon measure that's relevant to our region. What were the results for Measure 119?
Yeah, so Measure 119 looks to have passed. Right now, there's a 55% yes vote on it. And then this really applies to our region. That's why I'm talking about it. It requires cannabis business owners to sign what's called a labor peace agreement with a union that is seeking to represent their workers. And those labor peace agreements, at the very minimum, requires management not to give opinions or try to sway their employees when a union approaches them and gets them to vote on unionization. So in theory, this will make it easier for marijuana workers, from growers to retail shop workers, to unionize. And we have a lot of those businesses in the Rogue Valley, especially.
So it's on its way to passing?
Yep, on its way to passing. The United Food and Commercial Workers Local 555 Union was behind the measure. They've been trying to unionize shops in our region, in the state, for a while. They haven't been successful, so that might change very soon. We might get our first unionized cannabis shops, and we'll be following that as well.
Okay, well, thanks for that report. Jane, you've been covering the race for mayor in Grants Pass forever. Which has also been the center of the homeless crisis due to a Supreme Court case. So who are the candidates, and what's the latest?
So the candidates are Sarah Bristol, who's the current mayor. She's been there for 4 years, and she's facing a challenger in this guy, Clint Scherf. And so far, the preliminary results show that Sarah Bristol is losing her bid for re-election. Clint Scherf has about 54% of the vote so far. Sarah Bristol has about 44%. And the interesting thing in this race is that they really agree on what the key issues are facing the city. So homelessness, we've talked about before, public safety, economic development. And so the question really is whether or not you like the mayor and what she's done for the last 4 years, or do the voters want someone else and a new direction? Because again, they say the issues are the same. It's just, who do you want in that seat? And so far, it seems like Grants Pass voters are going with the challenger rather than reelecting their current mayor.
Well, give us some background on both.
So the current mayor, Sarah Bristol, her argument was really that she has the knowledge and the skills to keep the city moving forward. She had survived a recall attempt against her last fall. Nearly two-thirds of the ballots cast in that race were cast in her favor. And we've talked a lot, obviously, about the homeless crisis in Grants Pass. We know there was the Supreme Court case earlier this year that ruled in the city's favor. And Sarah Bristol has since said that that she's been successful in removing homeless people from the city's public parks. But the city now has these two temporary campsites where homeless people can camp, which is not really a long-term solution. So Sarah Bristol has talked about needing a long-term solution to the homeless crisis in Grants Pass, maybe a low-barrier shelter. She's also talked about wanting to develop affordable housing in the city and restore the rundown caveman pool in Grants Pass. So those are some of the things that she's talked about. And then on the other side, we've got the challenger, Clint Scherf, who again is so far winning. He's previously served on the city council. He did not respond to my request for comment, so I had to go off of his campaign materials and other interviews he's done. But basically, his argument is that the city needs new leadership, new direction. He says he wants nonprofits to focus on the homeless crisis, not the city. He doesn't think it's the city's job. And he also focused on economic development. So, for example, he wants to offer big box retailers incentives to come to the city, like short-term tax breaks to help with economic development. And both of them, again, have also talked about the importance of public safety as really a key issue, because the city does have a big gap in funding for public safety services. So that's something that they're going to need to work on as well. And so the interesting thing is how politics has really infiltrated this race, which maybe seems obvious, but this is a nonpartisan position, the mayor of Grants Pass. Sarah Bristol has been endorsed by the county Democratic Party. Clint Scherf has been endorsed by the county Republican Party. Again, it's a nonpartisan position, but the politics has kind of gotten its way in, and there's been endorsements by the respective county political party for the city council seats as well in Grants Pass. So I can talk about that. So there's eight candidates running for four seats, and almost all of them have been endorsed by a county political party. And so far, the preliminary results show that the Republicans are winning and kind of cleaning house in terms of the city council. So we've got Indra Nicholas, who is supported by the Republicans, and she's beating out the incumbent, Brian DeLagrange, who's supported by Democrats. She's got about 52% compared to his 47%. We've got the Republican-backed Victoria Marshall on track to beat Jay Meredith, who's the Democrat, about 55% to about 44%. And then we've got Kathleen Crone, also supported by the Republicans, and she's also beating the incumbent, Vanessa Ogier, who's supported by Democrats, about 45% to 36%. And then we've got that fourth seat will be filled by someone who's been supported by the Republicans, and that's Eric Schlogel. He was running unopposed, so that's another Republican who's on track to win there. So really could be some new blood in the leadership of Grants Pass, you know, four city councilors, potentially a new mayor. Could be a big turning point for the city, and obviously I'm especially interested to see what will happen with the homeless issue there.
Okay, that's a lot of background. I appreciate it. We've got a couple more minutes. You've also covered the race for commissioner in Jackson County. Mm-hmm. Who are the candidates, and what's the status?
So on the one side, we've got the Democrat, Denise Krause. The other side, we've got the Republican, Randy Sparacino. Preliminary results show Sparacino winning. He's got about 56% of the vote so far, and Denise Krause has about 43% so far.
Okay. Give us some background on those candidates.
So Denise Krause sort of ran on a platform of decreasing government spending, increasing transparency in local government. She also really wanted to address problems at the county's animal shelter. So those are things that she talked about wanting to address if she won. She had previously ran for county commissioner in 2022 and lost, and unfortunately is, you know, on track to lose again, unfortunately for her second race in a row. And then she was also the head of this grassroots organizing group that had tried to change the structure of the County Board of Commissioners earlier this spring. You might remember there were three ballot measures, but that effort had failed. If she does manage to win somehow, or had managed to win, she would have been the first Democrat to be elected to the Jackson County Board of Commissioners since 2006, when Dave Gilmore had won his second term. So there's a history of Republicans being elected there. And Randy Sparacino, again, is the Republican. He's the mayor of Medford. He didn't respond to my request for comment, but according to other interviews he's done and his political campaign website, he said he's running to continue his career in public service. He had formerly served as the police chief in Medford. He had also ran for state senate in 2022 and lost, but he's on track to win the county commissioner race here so far. And they both had also talked about, you know, addressing the overcrowding of the county jail, working on housing, working on homelessness. But either way, there'll be some new blood on the board. The other two current commissioners are both serving their third term, so we'll get a new commissioner here in Jackson County.
Well, we're almost out of time. I'm going to give you, Justin, about 10 seconds. Can you tell me who won the race for Harbor District Commission in Del Norte County?
Yep, Dan Schmidt, Annie Nemmer, and John Evans. And they're trying to turn around that struggling Harbor District in Crescent City.
Well, that's it for this special edition of The Debrief. Thanks for listening. You can reach the newsroom with comments on our coverage and suggestions for things that we should cover in the future through our news tip line. You can find that on our website at ijpr.org. And you can find this program and more on our website at jeffexchange.org or subscribe on Apple, Spotify, and all other programs.